here at the Occupy Portland encampment. It's a beautiful Tuesday morning, lots of people sharing ideas, talking together over coffee. It's really interesting to see what people do without without televisions in front of their faces, how people interact. And here at Occupy Portland, you see kind of the true human nature coming out. You see people sharing sharing everything that they have, sharing their equipment, sharing clothes, sharing food, and trusting each other in a way that really you don't see in other places. So we're going to go to an interview with Jack, who's one of the campers here. If people want to stop by the KBOO tent at Occupy Portland, we are just off of Southwest 4th and Main. We're in Freedom Square, otherwise known as Chapman Square. And right now, there are probably 400 or 500 people. It's kind of hard to estimate because there are tents all around, but there are a lot of people who are at a general assembly making decisions and discussing what are some of the plans and logistics for this camp. And we are joined by Jack, who's been camping here. Jack, what made you decide to come out and take this step and make this sacrifice?
I just felt that as an able-bodied individual and as an American, I felt that it was my duty. And yeah, just to come out and try to educate people, try to see how the community felt about all these problems.
And what have been some of your observations?
About the camp.
About the camp and about people's perception of the camp.
It's actually been surprising. It's a lot of people's views are more centralized than I would have thought. We've got a lot of different camps here, but I see a lot of people talking about the same things about corporate influence and politics and money just playing a bigger part, and that's generally what I've seen here, is just a lot of people talking about money and the economic situation.
And what do you think about that? I mean, do you think the economic situation is the most pressing issue?
I think, as I was talking with somebody here earlier about it, I think the economic issues are basically contrived to make us think that we have to lower ourselves down to a smaller job or a pay cut. I don't think all the factories are still there. We've got the labor. We've got everything we need. We've got an economy which they say we have to let control our issues, and so.
Yeah, it's a really different feeling here in these parks right now over the last few days than in other parts of the city. It's whereas in other places around, people might not even make eye contact or say hello. Here, there's organizing going on with every conversation. What do you see as the differences here in the park from kind of everyday life?
Well, I feel like people in the park here are more, they're breaking down a lot of barriers. Everybody's become more trusting. We see things like the community taking care of itself and us feeding the homeless and feeding anybody. And I see that as...
People feeding the homeless and helping each other out. So what do you think people can do to really address the issues that they're angry about? What are some of the ways to look for solutions?
I think the best thing we can do is just educate the populace. I believe every single human being has a basic sense of right and wrong, and I think if everybody is educated about the true issues, then I think everybody will make the right decision for themselves.
Great. And also Amara is next to me. Amara, what do you think are some of the ways we can make the world a better place?
We can grow gardens, and we can plant seeds, and it helps our community grow.
Thank you. And how old are you?
Seven.
Seven. And that sounds like a terrific idea, helping community grow. And in a way, this camp is actually like a seed that can grow and flower to expand to the society and the community at large. It's interesting how I've been involved in political movements and in relief following Hurricane Katrina. And each situation where people were left to their own devices without government intervention, this is the type of community that they would create, with different people taking on different teams and organizing among themselves rather than fighting. There was a real community effort to make sure that the elderly and that the least well off were taken care of in the community and that people were safe and that the resources were distributed equitably. So it's almost like this is our natural human nature, our state that we should be in.
Yes, I would totally agree. I think that I think society today tries to stigmatize true love in the sense of community, brotherhood, and yeah, I think basic humans are full of love like that, and this, nobody wants to take advantage of somebody else. Nobody just wakes up one day and says, hey, I want to go hurt my neighbor. It's much easier to help somebody out. I mean, it's scary. Yeah, it's scary. Like I said, true love is very scary, but it's a basic part of humanity, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch the conversations happen here and people talking with people that they might not necessarily know or agree with or have encountered before, but strangers, absolute strangers, talking to each other and sharing in this community.
Dr. Cornell West came down from Princeton to speak with us. He gave a very spirited speech at a rally here on Freedom Plaza. We had over 500 people attend that. And then about 250 people marched up to the Supreme Court to protest how the Supreme Court has given corporations more and more power over our political process. So they want corporate personhood to be revoked. They want corporations to be held accountable for their actions, not given breaks all of the time. The number of protesters, about 19 protesters, including Dr. West, sat down on the steps of the Supreme Court with signs protesting the corporatization of our political process, and they were arrested for that and held overnight. So they're still in the D.C. jail right now.
What's your name?
My name is Naima, and I'm here because when I first saw this starting to happen, I thought, when is this going to happen in Portland? I can't wait for this to happen in Portland. And it happened much sooner than I thought it would. And it's causing me to reflect on myself and how I contribute to the system and the problems, which I didn't even expect that train of thought. But I'm thinking a lot about what kinds of conscious consumer decisions I make, because while I have three jobs and I can't be here all the time, I can still do what I can at home, not only networking this movement and telling people about the events, but also thinking about what my decisions as a consumer and as a citizen, what they do to contribute to the problem at large. And I feel that until I adjust my actions and my lifestyle to reflect what I want to see happen in the world, it's not going to happen. And so I'm here to have this kind of dialogue and to educate myself so I can understand more who the enemy, what the enemy is, not who necessarily, and find out what I can do to change it and what I can tell other people when they ask me, what is the state, what are the demands of this movement? What is the point of this movement? And I understand that the movement is far too broad to really consolidate it to one specific statement. I think it can be consolidated to a few concise demands that are based on mass education. And a big problem with my generation I see is that we've become so complacent and we just expect our economy to take care of us and the person that we vote for to take care of us. And we have this harsh realization that our votes don't really do as much as we thought in this system as it is now. And so we need to do what we can to change the system. And it starts with protesting like this and raising awareness. The next step as this protest carries on is to educate ourselves and to educate each other, like this young woman is doing and will hopefully continue to do. So I'm basically here to become educated and to talk with my peers and to learn from people from all walks of life, students who are so far in debt that they'll never be able to pay it off and can't find a job, this is their home now. They live in these tents, they can't afford winter clothes. And I decided I'm going to go home and clean out my house of everything I don't need, and I'm going to bring it here because I don't need it. And then when my lease is up, I'm going to move into a smaller, simpler place, and I'm going to simplify my life, because while I don't have as much as the 1%, other countries see me as the 1%. And so if this movement succeeds, it's time to do what we can through our own actions to help what will be the 99% as we become the 1%, because we will as time carries on.
That's terrific. How old are you?
I'm 28. I just turned 28. My birthday was on the third day of this occupation, and I spent the whole time here, and it was the best birthday of my life, and it changed me.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank
you. Very inspiring.
Yeah, I think I'm Malcolm X, Martin Luther, Atta King, Atta Jr., some Bible verses, couple Sooners, and AK-47, that's a revolution. I think I'm Tupac, Bob Marley, Fela Kuti, Marcus Garvey, them the real ones, lot of fun, let you know, let them ride in form. Gon' give me some, a little more beat. Call your friends around, then call the police. I'm riding with my flow, take up four seats. So I'm gon' ghost ride, but with no sheets. One man by myself, even then I'm four deep. Like hotel swimming pools, that's 4 feet. These instas like the rooms, so sweet. Priceline, so cheap. I'm a cell phone, they some room keys. I'm some shell toes, they the shoestrings. I turn them off, I take them out. I'm revving run with the laces out. My Adidas, so adios. All day I dream like I'm comatose. That your ship's sinking and I'm so afloat. I'm T-Pain, I'm on a boat. Not the slave one, the Caprios either. Hit the waves come, they started in the bleachers. So I'm swag surfing, the pool's getting deeper. You still sweet though, here come them room keepers. Okay, I be the strings, you be the shoes. But guess what, now they Jimmy Choo's. I wear the pants, you in the pools. Yo, shmi out, my kish out. I got a fifth flow, call me brother man. Africa the set, yeah, that's the motherland. For that BP, I spit shit to tears. In Nigeria, that oil been spilling for like 50 years. 50 years, hell no, hell yeah. Tryna tell y'all, at this rate, niggas gon' lose. Can't search for water, or grow your own food. Tell me what's gon' happen when them stores close. And they ain't gon' open up no more. That's the real issue. Yeah, you gon' feel that. Hunger's your enemy, but you can't kill that. Wiggins, wake up. Don't join the army. Kill your own peoples, but fear Illuminatis. And they ain't even real, or are they? But you wouldn't even know, because you partake too f***ing much. If you start to doubt, they already in your mind and coming out your mouth. It's not a trick, it's a trap. Survival of the fit is what they aiming at. Ticking ain't fit, nope. Fat as hell, fat in mind, body fat as well. Who use most of drugs? Americans. What's in Afghanistan? Heroin. You think that's by mistake? They can't stop that. Don't think you safe though, because you not black. Greed is colorblind, so I'm colorblind. They gon' feel out yours soon as they done with mine. They say I try too hard, versus overwhelmed. I learned most of this from niggas sitting in jail. Where you think I'm from? From the streets, hugging. Triple OGs told me to teach, hugging. And that ain't made up, nope. That's a fact, yeah. They say that gangster shit is the shit I rap. Look who I attract, look at my inner circle. Bunch of street niggas and a couple Urkels. Look at my fan base, oh yes. Oh, a pro say, look at this protest. Where they do that at, who they do that for? Must mean I'm doing bad, and things moving slow. We talking revolution on public radio. You catch me down in Houston, sitting on them 84s. Trey, what's up? ABN, got your back, hugging. Sink or swim, we chill and chill. Shake off your masters, pray to God. Feel your mind faster. I think I'm Malcolm X, Martin Luther, Atta King, Atta Jr. Couple Bible verses, custom Sooners. AK-47, that's a revolution. I think I'm Tupac, Bob Marley,
pay like Cootie. Marcus Garvey, them the real ones. Light a lot of fun. Yeah, ain't no, I'm riding for F&M up.
Well, the past couple days, yesterday we marched to Wells Fargo Bank, a branch of it, and we closed it down for a good hour. There was a couple gentlemen who wanted to close their account that was with us in front of the bank, and they would not let them because they said, we are closed at this time. And the police came, and they were pretty courteous, and we dig that because we're nonviolent.
Right.
All we want is corruption out of the government, mm-hmm. our troops home, right. in homeliness, and peace around the world, my brother.
All right. Yeah. What do you guys think you'll get up to today?
I have no idea because I'm in charge of the police arrest layaway luggage deal.
All right.
And that is, if you're willing to get arrested, I will watch your stuff with, you know, till you get out of jail.
We're joined now by Abdul Hafif, who is the Amir of the Muslim Community Center here in Portland.
Yes,
welcome,
ma'am.
To KBOO.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I understand that you were down at the Right to Dream 2 encampment,
yes,
which
ma'am.
Is up the street. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. There's a movement by the name of Right to Survive that has been engaged in assisting the homeless community in securing their rights here in Portland for some years now. And I have a real good friend, Ibrahim Mubarak, and I went down to visit him, took my newborn daughter to go visit him when I ran into one of your associates. And we was down there really just support that particular movement because that's about surviving no matter what your situation is. When the luxuries have been taken away and snatched away, you still find a way to move forward and not at the expense of somebody else. So we was down there just showing some love and support, bringing the family to make them feel like that, you know, we are a community and we do support what you're doing.
So that encampment, how many people are camped out there now?
I don't know the exact numbers, so I wouldn't want to just quote a number. I know when I went down there, I seen roughly about anywhere from maybe 40, if not 30, 40 actual tents. I don't want to quote a number I'm not accurate on. I know it's gotten pretty big, though.
And one thing I've noticed is I've seen a lot less people on Burnside with their sleeping bags, which is always a place where there are a lot of people who end up sleeping overnight along the Burnside Bridge and that area.
The ideal is amazing, just the mere fact that we're optimizing the use of our space. And, of course, the lack of homeless people on the streets could have a lot to do also with Occupy Portland as well. But the reality is, even without that, you would still see a decrease of individuals roaming the streets. And more importantly, it's a safe space. Like they said, they have a right to survive. They don't have to be put out there and left like animals, you know, trying to function and learn how to navigate throughout the night, being ran up from up under bridges and harassed by the police. They have a comfortable place that's not being utilized by anybody else where they can be organized and civilized because they are citizens in a civilized society, right? So
one would hope. One
yeah,
would
yeah,
hope.
One would
Our
hope,
society
totally.
Has shown itself sometimes to be less than civilized.
True that,
but.
True that, yeah.
Is that a legal encampment there, actually?
Yes, currently it's a legal encampment. Yes.
And who set that up?
I believe it's a coalition of individuals, specifically the Right to Survive. And the person I know that's kind of one of the main personalities, not the main personalities, but one of the main personalities, Ibrahim Mubarak. So that organization specifically is responsible for that encampment.
What are some of the goals of that encampment then?
Again, to give individuals the opportunity to feel like that they're not being... They are being ostracized and they are being marginalized in society, but they're taking that right back. They're taking that opportunity back by taking advantage of a space and optimizing the use of it by giving them a safe place to rest their heads, you know.
What do you see as the way forward then?
The way forward in that particular movement is also the same way forward in the movement I think is going on here in Occupation Portland or Occupation Wall Street is Americans have to find ways within themselves to be willing to sacrifice the luxuries that we're used to in order to be able to live and be comfortable with our situation. Right now, we haven't been in that place, which is the reason why everybody's so frustrated because those luxuries are being taken from them, and now they're out here, and they're mad about those luxuries. But one of my things, I'm coming from Southern California, Native American, also African American, and knowing that experience, a lot of the luxuries we're mad about came from taking them from other people. So until we're aware of that and we're educating ourselves about that, then it concerns me that we're so frustrated and so organized around that frustration. And one reason why I took the opportunity to come and speak today briefly was to say that, hey, you know, this is evolving. This is amazing. This is great. You know, like, wow. At the same token, we do need to consider sitting down. Like in the 60s, they did teach-ins before they did sit-ins. We have to educate ourselves. We have to permeate the education in our society as a counter address to mainstream media. And that's one of the things I really wanted to say, is that if nothing else, hopefully this turns into something that becomes that dissemination of knowledge and information about our condition, alternative ways of surviving. If corporate America is challenged, if corporate America is toppled in America, what does that mean?
Well, and I think KABU is one of those platforms where we're able to provide that kind of community platform.
Yes.
For people to share information.
Yes.
For people who've researched a topic to talk about their latest research.
Yes.
And to really educate ourselves and our community.
Yes.
I know Noam Chomsky, when he spoke, said that he can tell when he's speaking in a place that has a community radio station, because the questions are more informed. People tend to have a lot more information.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, Abdul, as an imam of a Muslim community center,
yes,
you probably come across Arab Americans and Arabs. What do you think? Are people talking about parallels between the movements in Tunisia and Egypt, Tahrir Square, the Arab Spring?
So just one correction. I'm not the imam. Our imam is Muhammad Najib. I'm just the emir, which
Amir,
is kind of the administrator.
Okay.
I don't got that one on me. but it's a big responsibility. But yes, people are making the comparisons, and I think it's pretty premature, in my humble opinion, to make the comparison, because what took place inside Tahrir Square and what took place inside Tunisia was a popular movement of not only organized frustration, but these individuals were willing to sacrifice everything at the time that they went out there. And not questioning people's positions, but I don't know if we as Americans are really there today, and we need to be honest with ourselves, but at the same token, seize the moment and take advantage of this momentum that's being developed. So the comparison for me is not one that I give too much ear to, although I respect it and I know it's the signs of the times, and it's all a part of the whole, you know, I'm gonna call it counter resistance to any form of organized oppression. But I don't give ear to it too much. You know, the idea that, you know, this really stemmed from that, although we know it has some stimulus.
Well, is the oppression the same?
The oppression is actually the same. If you look at it, if you look at Tunisia, look at Egypt, you look at Syria, most of these places are sponsored by governments that support capitalism. America is a capitalist government, obviously, and it's the strong arm for transnational corporations, and these transnational corporations have an interest in the natural resources of other people's worlds, and they put people in power in order to make sure that those resources are organized in a particular way where certain people get it so they can do their work.
So is the solution the same as well?
I think it's a little bit, I don't know. I'm humble enough to say I don't know if the solution is the same. I know the solution is generally the same, is that you have to resist, but I think you have to be intelligent with it. You have to be very intelligent with it. And I think for us in America, we have to sit down, take advantage of this, and begin to educate our community, build relations. We got race relations, that's a problem here in America still. We got gender relations, that's a problem here in America. Take this opportunity and engage ourselves. Permeate it. And let it be not a movement, but let it become a lifestyle, counter to the American lifestyle that we're used to.
Just another lifestyle choice.
A choice lifestyle, I mean.
Can you say something about your personal journey?
My personal journey, I'm born and raised in Southern California, grew up gangbanging in the streets of California, was incarcerated at age 17 to age 26, and I was blessed by God to find him and to engage in not tearing down society, but building society, and that's what I'm here doing. And I do it any way I can, specifically the development of human beings. I'm not so much concerned about the changing of systems and institutions until you first focus on the human being, because they're the one creating institutions and developing.
What do you think, Abdul, is the role of spiritual communities like the Muslim community or Christians in churches or Jews to actually support this type of popular resistance?
I believe it's imperative. I believe that it's not reflective of their prophets that they follow not to support this type of movement. The movement is legitimate. There's tremendous things that's happening in our world today, specifically in America. Let's talk about America, that is unfair and is unjust. And it doesn't just affect people that believe in God or people that don't believe in God. It affects everybody. And the people that believe in God and people that don't believe in God but believe in goodness, we all have a responsibility to get out there and build in our community, especially when we see it being torn down. So I said it, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever you believe in as a spiritual leadership, you should be in support, whether from your pulpits, from your homes, or coming out here and supporting them and helping guide us. They're saying they're mad. They're saying they're frustrated. They have a right to. How are we going to move, though, is a question.
Right. And so here we are in Freedom Square, Tahrir.
Yeah.
As in,
our Tahrir.
It's Portland's Tahrir Square.
Yes.
And what do you think are some of the next steps for a popular movement like this to take?
I believe, if I just keep it simple, the most fundamental step is for us to realize that we do have to seize the moment. We can't think that we're going to sit up here and it's 1,200, I heard you say 1,200 cities right now?
1,200 are coming out tomorrow.
1,200 cities, and that's amazing. That's amazing. What are we going to get out of it? And we can't be too grandiose and we can't be too far in our vision. We have to be very practical and very real. And the number one thing that we're dealing with is that we're unaware when it comes to how do we move day to day? How do we become more of a community? How do we become more of a family in America? How do we actually learn how to not be dependent upon corporate America? Not how to be consumers? How do we learn how to help our environment? These are things we all talk about in college and we all have little pocket movements going on. This is a popular movement developing. Let's make that our agenda and let education be the number one thing. I guarantee if you educate the people and you empower the people with knowledge, the actual mass movement, the mass protest will happen, but it will happen with an empowered body of people. Right now, I don't know how empowered we are. We're frustrated. We're mad. That's why we're out here. Put some knowledge behind that.
You know, one of the things that that came out today in our interviews this morning was that there are every day at 2 to 5 teach-ins taking place in Terry Shrunk Plaza.
Mm.
And that just started today. So
okay.
People are taking that to heart.
Yeah.
And everyone in the community is invited to come and share ideas and information.
Can you say where that is again?
Terry Shrunk Plaza is down here at 3rd and Madison.
Okay.
And right in front of the federal building. And that's adjacent to the two parks that have the encampment going right
okay.
now. So every day they're hoping to have teach-ins there between 2 and 5.
That's where it's at, right there.
And Malik Rahim, who, if you were listening earlier on KBOO, Black Panther from New Orleans,
yes.
former Black Panther, is going to be here on Monday. He said he will speak at the encampment and, I guess, at that teach-in, and then he will be at the Unitarian Church on Tuesday evening. So definitely these elders, people who have been through these kinds of struggles before, are the kind of people that that we need to learn
yes,
from.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So thanks for being with us, Abdul. Any last words?
My only last words is thank you guys for the time that you guys are volunteering, getting the message out. This is where the core is at, KBOO. Like they say, man, community radio, what would we be without it? So support the KBOO radio, support these volunteers, pray for them, and that's all I have to say is thank you.
Thanks so much. And we're
An estimated 3,000 to 4,000 people rallied and marched on downtown Portland's streets this Saturday, marking the 10-year anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. Organized in part by Portland Peace and Justice Works, the event aimed to tie current economic problems with America's many ongoing wars. The event began at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at Chemainsky Park in the Southeast Park Blocks, where the protesters gathered to listen to speakers and get their spirits up in preparation for the march. In this audio, Speaker Veronica Dujon fires up the crowd.
We are going to occupy Portland and Wall Street. We are going to strike, and we are going to occupy our workplaces, and we are going to organize unions, and we are going to get single-payer health care, and my mom's going to keep her post office job, and your parents are going to keep their jobs. Public access, KBOO, you name it. It's time for for the 99%. It's time for the working class. It's time for us to stay out in the streets and shut down these cities. And we're going to shut it down until we get what we want.
The protesters then marched through the city streets of downtown, where they stopped on Main Street at the Occupy Portland encampment to speak to the connection between the war economy and Wall Street.
It's so important that the anti-war movement and the anti-Wall Street movement are connected, because you know who war benefits? It benefits Wall Street. It doesn't. It's not nobody. It's Wall Street and a handful of politicians and a bunch of weapons manufacturers. It doesn't benefit workers. It doesn't benefit schools. It doesn't benefit our communities. Right now, instead of ending the wars, creating jobs, strengthening the social safety net, Congress, our government, our president, our peace president, are doing the exact opposite.
The march ended up at the First Unitarian Church downtown, where participants were invited to attend a lecture on the theme, 10 Years in Afghanistan, End the Wars, Bring Our Money Home. This is Joshua Harper for KBOO News.
Hey, this is Anna Preble for KBOO at the Occupy Portland camp in downtown Portland, and we are here talking to Alejandro. Would you like to introduce yourself, actually, to our listeners?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Alejandro, and I am a member of the community. I live here in Northwest Portland, and my office is down on Oak and 4th, and I just come here often.
Your own office, or do you work for somebody else?
No, that's my own office. I'm a counselor.
A counselor?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And how long have you been coming down to the camp?
I came the first day, and then on and off, when I have some free time and meet some people, some of my friends here.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Yeah, so you're not camping here, though. You're just coming here during the day?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so do you want to tell us more about what you've been involved with at the camp here?
Yeah, a few times when I came, I noticed some behaviors that were making me feel uncomfortable, and some of my friends also felt uncomfortable, and we were just thinking about, you know, what does that mean for the camp and for the community, and decided to get involved a little bit and start talking to other people about how could we improve the safety for all here in the space. Mm-hmm. And I realized that people were very receptive. They just needed to connect with each other to talk about the issue. And a lot of people came to a working group that we had on Saturday, and then we met also after lunch, and then we met on Sunday, and then we presented a proposal to the General Assembly, and the proposal got passed, the process turned into the guidelines that the camp is using now for safety and well-being.
Okay. And so after two sessions of collaborating on this proposal, that's when you presented it to the General Assembly?
Right. We actually presented it on, so the process of the General Assembly is that when there's a concern, you present a proposal. It's almost like a pre-proposal. And so people hear about it, then they get involved the next day. And then the following day, you present the more formal proposal for voting and amendments and modifications. Mm-hmm. So we actually had to propose it twice. But yeah, it started on Friday evening, and then we worked on Saturday and Sunday. It involved around maybe 60, 80 people who came in and out of the meetings, because the meetings lasted for about 2 hours or mm-hmm. 3 hours sometimes, and got a very varied sample of opinions and takes on what does safety mean, and how can we all cohabitate in a way that feels safe mm-hmm. for all. Yeah, it was an interesting process.
Yeah, 60 to 80 people coming in to contribute to something that they were directly concerned with as far as what they were seeing around the camp. Where did you meet? Where did you find the space? Was it at the Terry Schrunk
Right.
at the
yes.
amphitheater?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow. And how did you get the word out? So it was generally through the General Assembly that you got word out to the rest of the people in the camp?
Right. Yeah. So we came up to the assembly and mentioned the concerns and invited people to join a working group the next day, and then people showed up at 10 in the morning. And then some other people that were just in the camp that saw us having the conversation started adding on. Mm-hmm. So we increased the number of the people participating from just people paying attention to what we were doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, how about if we look at the proposal itself and what was adopted by the, or passed by the General Assembly?
Yeah. So the proposal, again, is a starting point. We are aware that we cannot create a legal system, and mm-hmm. You know, this is, we are a community already mm-hmm. in Portland, in established society, right? So we wanted to create guidelines that would orient or create a spirit that would orient people's behaviors rather than coming with a strict law or an enforcement system. Like, we can't recreate a police or a judiciary system within the community, right?
Right.
So we borrow from, or we read and paid attention to some of the work that people at Wall Street were doing, the Occupy Wall Street movement, and saw their wording and their language for safety. Mm-hmm. And they use words like zero tolerance, for example, which we felt it was a little bit strong for our community, mm-hmm. or it just didn't reflect the spirit of the people who were involved in the working group here. So we took also some ideas, some of the learning experience from the Right to Dream 2 group that is serving here the homeless population.
Right, at Burnside and Forest.
Right. And then from people just involved in the camp. And again, the people who participated in the group range from people who wanted absolutely no rules at all, or no expectations, mm-hmm. To people who wanted strong enforcement of very strict rules,
That's quite so a gamut.
That was a great debate. I learned a lot about, you know, who comes to the camp and the people who cohabitate here. So we decided to create some basic safety principles. We define them as safety, well-being, and solidarity, in the sense that these principles both reflect our hopes for safety, also involving well-being for mm-hmm. all, and solidarity is just the spirit of caring for each other, right? And so I don't know if you want me to read them to you.
That's
or just give you some notion. There are about 12 items.
Mm-hmm. They just kind of create a a general. So what we want to call as guidelines.
Okay, so the first item is just to set the tone, indicating that, you know, when we are here in the camp, we are hoping to understand that our individual freedoms need to be considering the well-being of the group, of mm-hmm. everybody who's here. Mm-hmm. So the second point is this is a weapons-free zone. The group is the Occupy Portland camp and community is nonviolent, and we will not tolerate verbally aggressive or physically violent behavior, including unwanted touching or anything that would make anybody feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And we pledge to resolve any conflicts in a creative and nonviolent manner. In communal areas, no recreational drugs or alcohol use. We recognize that a safe space is needed for people who are carrying medical marijuana cards. Mm-hmm. So people who are carrying the marijuana cards, we understand that they need a safe place to receive their treatment. Mm-hmm. We respect the rights and privacy of our fellow occupiers and our neighbors. We will not create unnecessary disturbances. Degrading ethnic, racist, classist, sexist, or homophobic remarks are not acceptable. Mm-hmm. We cannot permit open flames or other hazardous activities. We direct all direct smoking to the corner of Southwest 4th and Main. And we encourage everyone to follow health and sanitary recommendations throughout the camp. And we, you know, some people brought up the idea of having people actually sign something indicating that they understand these guidelines when they come into camp, but many people oppose the idea of having anybody, you know, to get into the legalistic dimension of getting signatures and collecting data on mm-hmm. who signs these as a contract.
Yeah.
So we made a create a statement that indicates that by being in the camp, you agree to uphold and abide to these guidelines.
Okay.
And all these are just very important, explicit, agreed principles that our General Assembly voted in favor with a strong majority. And mm-hmm. we included amendments that people proposed. We actually included 4 amendments.
Yeah.
So we're now creating signs that uh-huh. we're posting all throughout the camp. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to educate people on these guidelines. And by creating that social awareness, we understand that that social expectation will begin to be more cohesive, and mm-hmm. and that in itself will start doing the work mm-hmm. that we hope happens. And right now, we already have some of these signs out because we send them to print and we're putting them around.
Oh.
But right now, we already, after having this public conversation and these having passed approved by the Assembly, you can feel that there is a better sense of understanding of mm-hmm. limits and safety and well-being.
There's more of a fabric rather than being, like you said, being the police or
yes.
you know, anything like an enforcement agency,
right.
which is really not you know, it's not totally against the spirit, but it doesn't contribute to the spirit, it would seem
right.
to me personally.
Yeah.
But yeah, so are the amendments that you talked about, the 4 amendments, are those already reflected?
Included,
in those?
Yes,
oh, okay.
right. By changing some of the language that we were using and including some items. There is also, we came up with a draft of a protocol that, again, is not a strict rule,
mm-hmm.
or we don't expect this, we don't have a training manual or a manual for dealing with transgressions of mm-hmm. these guidelines, but we proposed a model just for people to have a reference of how to deal with things, and we are hoping to create a system where, first of all, by educating everybody, we are all empowered to communicate the information to everybody about mm-hmm. safety, well-being, and so on. And then if you see something that is really not within the spirit of safety of the camp,
mm-hmm.
We encourage people, if they assess that the situation is safe, to communicate this to the person. To tell them, please, will you mind not doing this, and offer them alternatives. And also, again, very importantly, to assess that you're safe doing that.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel safe and you do that and the behavior doesn't stop,
mm-hmm.
We propose that the second step is to ask people who are around you to approach the person with you in a non-aggressive way. You maybe 2 or 3 people, not mm-hmm. a mob, which is something that we should show the social concern for the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if at that point that doesn't get resolved, to call the people who are working on Peacekeeper by calling Peacekeeping. And we also empower as a community for the Peacekeepers to, or for anybody actually, to make their own judgment in deciding to call the police or not.
If it's really threatening.
Yes,
really
right. Threatening. So if something seems to feel that is threatening and you assess that you want to call the police, we agree to empower anybody to make that decision, particularly the peacekeeping people.
Mm-hmm.
And that sets sort of the limit to mm-hmm. how much our community can handle with certain behaviors.
Right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the conflict resolution process is kind of not ad hoc, but just kind of up to the person who's encountering what they see as maybe not in spirit with these guidelines. It's all kind of depending on the situation. There's no active, what would you say the role is of the, or is there a role played by the peacekeeping team as far as conflict resolution, or is there even a need for it at this point? It sounds like there hasn't been any incidents that really require that.
Yeah, the peacekeeping has been a role that is being defined every day.
Mm-hmm.
To my best understanding, the intention of the people who are involved in peacekeeping is to de-escalate conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And until now, because we didn't have guidelines, they mm-hmm. were seen kind of as the resource to be called in when there was an issue. And what mm-hmm. we're trying to do now is to create enough understanding and awareness so everybody is, in a way, a peacekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
However,
yeah.
we do preserve the role of the peacekeepers, and we're hoping that they will receive more training in de-escalation of conflict,
mm-hmm.
And they'll be a resource. But we're trying to spread the responsibility on everybody
who's in the camp.
Who's in the camp.
Yeah, that's let's see. And is this and this sounds like a work in progress. Do you have just like the do you rely on the General Assembly as the forum for examining that, or is still a working group that's kind of
The working group
is done.
Yeah, it's done once we it took a lot of effort and
none
of us are experts. We're just people in the community caring for each other. The piece that I wanted to share that I think is good to keep in mind around this is the Occupy movement or the Occupy Portland space, these parks particularly right now, have become a safe space for many people in the community. So there are a lot of people who have been marginalized who are coming here, maybe not for political reasons or not to make a political statement, but because there is kindness and there is free food and there is coffee and there is, you know, just a community, right? So we need to understand that this movement, and that in itself could be seen as a political statement, but just to share that we're having a lot of people here who have severe drug and alcohol issues and mental illness, and we are all cohabitating quite safely. I'm really amazed by the level of civilitude and love and community that everybody's showing. And so when we have these guidelines, we understand that we are not able to handle some of the crisis situations that may come up just because this place is safe. So we're hoping to engage everybody. I've been in mental health for a while, so we're hoping to engage people in the mental health field and people in the social service agencies. If you can, please show up here, because a lot of your clients are now coming here.
Just because it's a naturally safe space now with that fabric of cohesion. And where would you direct the service providers and any other interested professionals to go to the medical, the health tent, or the information?
I would say the information booth, and just to talk to people, anybody in the community. If you show up, this doesn't belong to anybody. I didn't know anybody, and now I'm on the radio talking about these guidelines, right? Like, I haven't been involved in the organizing of this. I just showed up, saw a need, and addressed it as a citizen. And I've seen plenty of people. When we were having the meetings, somebody just showed up with his three children with coffee and some food and served us all coffees. And then somebody else came and started playing music for us as we were having the meetings. And these people are just like you and I, like the listener. So I invite everybody to come down. The Occupy movement is whoever is here. So if you're here, you are it, I'd say. And so regarding the population that we see in the camp is very diverse, but clearly this space is attracting a lot of the people who historically have been dislocated. They're finding a place. And so we need to ask ourselves, you know, how is this going to evolve as more people keep coming in with needs that maybe we cannot attend? So that's a question that I have for the audience. And if everybody gets involved, I think we can do great work. But we need everybody to just show up and feel comfortable that, you know, I invite you to challenge your own stereotypes. If you see people that you may not interact usually on your regular routines, I invite you to invite everybody to challenge themselves and stick around. And it can be a very healing experience for yourself, for whoever takes that challenge. I did, and I'm finding it very, very enriching.
Yeah. This is definitely a space that's it's been safe enough. It feels safe enough that you can overcome that apprehension that you might feel if you see some activity, or I mean, not activity, but just like an image of someone that you think of as not the typical kind of person you would talk to every day, either in your neighborhood or on the bus or whatever. But yeah, there's definitely that sense of community here. So, I guess the message would be that, you know, there is a need for people to just come in and step into their roles here, whatever they may be, in building this safe space. And Is there anything else that you would like to add that I didn't ask about? I mean, I hesitate to ask about R2-D2, about the Right to Dream 2, because they're not affiliated with this camp, but I'm kind of curious what their contributions might have been.
Oh, they were great. We definitely switched gears in the language. I don't have it here. Our first draft, when we work on these guidelines, used a lot of the language from the New York.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in New York for 7 years, and you know, the zero tolerance language is very New York.
Yeah, it's a different culture there for sure.
Yeah. And so, also, they're facing different situations than we are.
Yeah.
So the Right to Dream 2 guidelines for safety, the ones that we borrow, I don't have them here with me, but they were very very much. Our guidelines reflect that spirit, inviting for nonviolence and not focusing so much in this is forbidden or that's forbidden, but just making plain statements that don't sound punitive or threatening, and emphasizing the safety and, again, nonviolence language. So
at the same time, it's being more inclusive. And
yes,
cool. Well, thank you so much for talking to us about this. This is really good to learn about. And this was passed, the other night? So
yeah,
this was
October
Sunday.
16th, right.
Oh, yeah, okay.
These guidelines are on the website, and I think we now have officially printed many of them. The idea is to have welcome signs with these guidelines everywhere.
Oh.
And there are copies also in the information booth. Mm-hmm. So I invite you to come and get a copy and just be part of it.
And check it out. Yeah, and then what you're getting printed now, though, by the way, is just the signs that at the entrances?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You'll see that. And then we will have some people trained to walk around greeting people and sharing this. The guidelines too.
Cool. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much, Alejandro.
Thank you.
It was good to meet you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Me too.